zum Abschluss dieser Runde auf dem Podium würde ich jetzt gerne noch einmal auf den Sudan zurückkommen. Ich habe anfangs gesagt, dass ich mehr oder weniger verstanden habe, worum es da geht. Aber eines habe ich immer noch nicht verstanden. Warum tut die sudanesische Regierung das? Also ich kann den Nationalsozialisten kognitiv verstehen. Sie waren Antisemiten. Ich verstehe auch irgendwie die Roten Khmer. Sie waren exterminatorische, mörderische Klassenkämpfer. Ich habe einfach nicht verstanden, was die Motive der gegenwärtigen sudanesischen Regierung sind. Wenn ich es richtig verstanden habe, ist es kein Religionskrieg. Es sind auf beiden Seiten Muslime. Wenn ich es richtig wahrgenommen habe, ist es auch nicht das, was man als Rassenauseinandersetzung bezeichnen könnte. Also da sind die äußeren Merkmale doch sehr ähnlich. Also was sind die Motive? Warum tun die das? Und damit würde ich noch die Frage verbinden, was für ein Regime herrscht eigentlich in Khartoum? Ich habe vor dem Hintergrund unserer Konferenz mit einiger Beunruhigung heute in der Zeitung gelesen, dass irgendein US-amerikanisches Gericht in einem Terrorprozess festgestellt hat, dass offenbar auch im Sudan es eine Unterstützung von islamistischem Terrorismus gibt. Ist das ein radikal islamistisches Regime mit genozidalen Interessen?
This is the, of course, a key question that we've been asking ourselves at Human Rights Watch for 3 years now, because, you know, for myself as a researcher and for my colleagues who have been also doing the research in Darfur for the last 3 years, our investigations were trying to answer a number of questions. And one of those questions was, as was discussed earlier, the question of whether the crimes in Darfur amount to genocide. And as Lotte has already, you know, I think raised some of the great difficulties that exist legally for us answering that question. And perhaps it helps to, for just a moment, to kind of zoom in into Darfur at the, say, the field level. And let me just tell you just briefly about what it means when we do an investigation. What is that process? And what are we looking for? I mean, we are a research and advocacy organization at Human Rights Watch, and our advocacy is drawn from and absolutely must be based on our research. And the research means basically trying to establish the facts, of course, of what has been happening. And in Darfur, what that has meant is that over the course of the last 3 years, we have undertaken a number of research trips where the core of what we do is interviewing people and interviewing eyewitnesses and people who have been victims of abuses. And that means not just sitting down with someone for 20 minutes, but often 2, 3, 4, 5 hours of interviewing someone, going through all the details of what has happened. And then, of course, trying to cross-check that with other people who were also witnesses or victims of the same incident. And over the course of the last 3 years, we have accumulated a database of about, I think we've interviewed well over 1,000 people, most of them victims and eyewitnesses of abuses. I believe that this is probably one of the biggest single databases of this kind of testimony probably that exists on Darfur up to now, next to, of course, the Commission of Inquiry and other organizations like Amnesty's work. And when we did the first research trip in January and February 2004 in Chad, it was very clear already from the basis of that trip alone that we were talking about crimes against humanity. I was in that trip and we interviewed a wide range of people. I traveled up and down the border with Sudan, interviewing people who in some cases had fled their homes just 10 days earlier or a week earlier or sometimes 2 days earlier. So the incidents, the experiences were very fresh in their memories. And it was very possible at that point, you know, as well, because most of these people had not been interviewed. So they were just speaking very openly about what had happened. And there was, I think, very little opportunity for any kind of political manipulation. And what was striking immediately was the consistency of some of the testimony in north and south, across different ethnic groups, across men and women and children, you know, so very much a demographic spread. And the consistency was really striking for me as a researcher, because I've worked in a number of other places, but this was very, very, very striking. The patterns that people were describing, the aerial bombardment first, then the ground attacks by militias, and again, these militias were usually working jointly with government forces. They weren't just, you know, sort of Janjaweed off there on their own. They were joint attacks with government forces, you know, with vehicles, and again, always this coordination with the aerial component, not only bombardment, but also surveillance. So all of this, I think, made it very, very clear that what we were talking about was crimes against humanity, the descriptions of what would happen during these attacks, you know, the killings, often wanton killings, of elderly people who were left in the villages, who could not escape, the shooting down with helicopter gunships or with guns of people who were actually fleeing, so shots in the back, of course. I mean, some of these basic indicators of the kind of crimes we were seeing. But we came back again and again to this question, well, what is the motive? And I think there are basically two poles of opinion when we talk about the motive of the government of Sudan for what has happened in Darfur. On the one hand, you have the pole of opinion that believes, that analyzes what has happened and says, look, this is the reaction of a government to a rebel insurgency that is drawn from certain ethnic groups, and this is a campaign that is aimed at draining the sea from the fish. The rebel insurgency in Darfur was and still is a largely rural-based insurgency. If you look at the terrain in Darfur, you're talking about often small mountain croppings, jebels they're called, and then large open spaces. And when you look at the population who's been driven out into the camps in Darfur, this was a rural campaign. This was driving out rural villagers from their homes into the towns. So on that level, there was clearly one of the aims was to empty the rural population and deprive rebel movements of support and bases in the rural areas. Now, the other pole of opinion, of course, will take a different view and say, okay, that may well be the case, but there was another motive. And that motive was, in fact, on an ethnic or racial or ideological basis to destroy these ethnic groups, to destroy this rural population as a group, as a society. And there, that poll of opinion would point to certain other facts, like, for example, the fact that in the course of these attacks, we've seen a massive amount of sexual violence. We've seen some sexual violence perpetrated against women and girls, and not only the act itself, but acts, of course, often accompanied by racial or ethnic slurs and insults, and comments like, you know, we're going to make you have a light-skinned baby, or we're going to, you know, this kind of verbal evidence. I think, you know, within Human Rights Watch, we've had enormous discussions about this, and at the end of the day, we have not taken the position that it is genocide. However, I think one can look at the facts of Darfur, and reasonable minds can differ. And I think that at the end of the day, this is, of course, one of the questions that the International Criminal Court will face in the prosecutions that hopefully will take place. And I think just one other comment on this, I think I would like to say, is that, you know, the International Commission of Inquiry, headed by Professor Antonio Cassese, this was one of the questions, of course, that they were posed in their mandate by the UN Security Council, was, is what's happening in Darfur genocide? And they took they made some interesting conclusions. They concluded that there was not a state policy of genocide. And from my own experience as a researcher, this is something with which to a large extent I would agree, that the intent of the state, of the Sudanese state, may or may not have been to eliminate these groups. But their conclusion is that it wasn't. But, and this was a crucial but, they made a very interesting statement. They said, you know, they said very clearly that the Sudanese government committed crimes against humanity, committed war crimes, And they also said that the situation in Darfur actually may be worse than genocide. Now, of course, this begs the question, what can be worse than genocide? And I wish that that Professor Kasese were here, because I would love to ask him that question directly and hear his response. But my interpretation of that statement is as follows. I think there may have been two reasons for that. I think one is that when you look at what happened in Darfur, and you look also at the history in South Sudan, you're looking at a government that had 20 years of experience in South Sudan of what the kinds of tactics they used in Darfur could bring. And you see the same tactics used in Darfur. So you clearly have knowledge, even if that this was not, you know, that there was an intent to commit genocide, you had knowledge that this could very well result in crimes against humanity. I think that's one thing. I think the second thing is that the situation that has resulted from this, of what has happened in Darfur the last 3 years, is a situation that poses the very serious risk of genocide, if genocide has not yet occurred. Because the ethnic polarization that we've seen among communities because of what has happened over the last 3 years is extraordinarily dangerous. And I think, you know, if you look at Rwanda, if you look at other situations, none of these situations happened overnight. Of course, genocides that we've seen in the past often occur after decades of atrocity and impunity, and this is a huge concern for me looking at Darfur, that what has happened already is appalling and atrocious, but what could come could actually be worse if it's not addressed.